Mr. Bennett! Oh, Mary, have you seen him? Stop that reading.
Mama! Oh.
Mr. Bennett! Lydia, come on! Mr. Bennett! Jane, listen, have you seen your father?
Is it the living
room? Oh! Mr. Bennett! Mr. Bennett! Mr. Bennett!
It is a truth universally acknowledged.
Mr. Bennett!
That a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife.
But you are here all the while. My dear Mr. Bennett, have you heard that Netherfield Park is let at last?
I have not.
Don't you want to know who has taken it?
You want to tell me, and I have no objection to hearing it.
Mrs. Long says that Netherfield is taken by a young man of large fortune from the north of England, that he came down on Monday in a chaise and four to see the place and was so delighted that he is to take possession before Michaelmas.
What is his name?
Mr. Bingley.
Oh, is he married or single?
Oh, single, to be sure. A single man of large fortune, 4,000 or 5,000 a year. What a fine thing for one of our girls.
How so? How can it affect them?
Oh, my dear Mr. Bennett, how can you be so tiresome? You must know that I'm thinking of his marrying one of them.
Is that his design in settling here?
Oh, design? How can you talk so? But it is very likely that he may fall in love with one of them, and therefore you must visit him as soon as he comes.
I see no occasion for that.
Indeed, you must go, for it will be impossible for us to visit him if you do not.
You are over-scrupulous, madam. I will send a few lines by you to assure him of my hearty consent to his marrying whichever he chooses of the girls.
Oh.
Though I must throw in a good word for my little Lizzie.
You will do no such thing. Lizzie is not a bit better than the others, and I'm sure she is not half so handsome as Jane, nor half so good-humoured as Lydia. But you're always giving her the preference.
They have none of them much to recommend them. They are all silly and ignorant like other girls.
Mr. Bennett, how can you abuse your own children in such a way? You take delight in vexing me. You have no compassion for my poor nerves.
You mistake me, my dear. I have a high respect for your nerves. They are my old friends. I have heard you mention them with consideration these last 20 years, but I hope you will get over it and live to see many young men of 4,000 a year come into this neighbourhood.
It will be of no use to us if 20 such had come, since you will not visit them.
Depend upon it, my dear, when there are 20, I will visit them all. Close the door behind you, my dear.
Mr. Bennett was an odd mixture of sarcastic humour, reserve and caprice. But the experience of 23 years had been insufficient to make his wife understand his character.
Girls, all is lost!
She was a woman of mean understanding, little information and uncertain temper.
Oh, wicked man! Wicked, wicked man!
And the sole business of her life was to get her daughters married.
Oh, Mary, for heaven's sake, have a little compassion for my nerves. How my head aches.
Sorry, Mama. Shall I rub your temples, Mama?
Oh, yes. Oh, and my shoulders, dear Jane. Oh, what a godsend you are to me.
Mary must practice, Mrs. Bennett. What will Mr. Bingley think if she doesn't play well? He will not like it at all.
Well, we have no way of knowing what Mr. Bingley likes, since we are not to visit.
But you forget, Mama, that we shall meet him at the assemblies. That Mrs. Long has promised to introduce him.
I do not believe that Mrs. Long will do any such thing, Lizzie. She has two nieces of her own. She is such a selfish, hypocritical woman, and I have no opinion of her.
It is fortunate, then, my dear, that you may have the advantage of your friend and introduce Mr. Bingley to her.
Oh, I'm sick of Mr. Bingley. Don't get coughing so, Kitty, for heaven's sake.
I cannot help it.
Why didn't you tell me so before, Mrs. Bennett? If I had known as much this morning, I certainly would not have called on him. It is very unlucky, but as I have actually paid the visit, we cannot escape the acquaintance now.
Oh, but I knew I would persuade you at last. I was sure you loved your girls too much to neglect such an acquaintance.
I don't think it amusing, Papa, how you tease her.
Now, Lydia, you have an excellent father. I do not know how we will ever make amends to him for his kindness.
I will leave you to ponder on it, ladies. There now, Kitty, you may cough as much as you please.
Lydia, my love, though you are the youngest, I dare say Mr. Bingley will dance with you at the next ball.
Oh, I am not afraid, for though I am the youngest, I am the tallest.
What if Mr. Bingley is exceedingly short?
Then I shan't like to dance with him anyway.
Oh, of course he won't be short. Oh, I am well satisfied, girls. If I can see one of you happily settled at Netherfield, and all of the remainder of you equally well married, I shall have nothing left to wish for.
In a few days, Mr. Bingley returned Mr. Bennet's visit and sat about 10 minutes with him in his library. He had entertained hopes of being admitted to a sight of the young ladies, of whose beauty he had heard much, but he saw only the father. The ladies were somewhat more fortunate, for they had the advantage of ascertaining him from an upper window.
Oh, girls! Oh, look, he comes on a horse!
It is a black horse! And he wears a blue coat.
He looks an average height, though he is seated.
Oh, what a gentleman he is.
An invitation to dinner was soon afterwards dispatched, but Mr. Bingley was obliged to be in town the following day. Mrs. Bennet was quite disconcerted, but Mrs. Long quieted her fears by informing her he was gone to London to get a party for the forthcoming assembly. And so it was. When his party entered the assembly room, it consisted of 5 altogether. Mr. Bingley, his 2 sisters, the husband of the eldest, and another young man.
His name is Darcy. He has 10,000 a year.
He is handsomer than Mr. Bingley.
A large estate in Derbyshire. 10,000 a year. Oh, he is a fine figure of a man. Bingley has a pleasant way about him, but this Darcy is very tall.
Mama, please.
He's the talk of the room. He has danced only once with Miss Bingley. She's a handsome girl, but not as pretty as my Jane.
Oh, Mama, dear, forbear.
Mrs. Bennet. Oh. What a pleasure it is. Is this not a splendid gathering?
Mr. Bingley, we could not believe that we had lost you to London almost as soon as you arrived here. I hope you are not disappointed with what Meryton has to offer you, sir.
Oh, no, indeed. Everybody has been most kind and attentive. Oh. Miss Bennet, I wondered if I might have the pleasure of this dance.
You will, most certainly. She loves to dance. Jane, dear.
Thank you, Mr. Bingley.
Oh, they look how well they go together. Where is Lady Lucas? I wonder how she's seen my Jane.
Your arrival in Hertfordshire has caused a great stir, Mr. Bingley.
It is true. I've never enjoyed such popularity. I hope I can live up to expectation.
Are you happy to be here?
Oh, yes. I enjoy the country far more than the city. There is so much here, Miss Bennet, that is to be admired. I can see nothing but good.
Netherfield is indeed a magnificent house.
Oh, but you must visit at the earliest opportunity. And your family, of course. In fact, I must give a ball at Netherfield to thank everyone for their welcome.
That would be much appreciated, I know, particularly by my younger sisters.
Then I will fix a date. And I must introduce you to my sisters.
I will be pleased to make their acquaintance.
Your mother is right, you know. You dance very well.
You are too kind.
Not at all. I noticed you when I first entered the room.
You will make me blush.
And I'm sure even that will become you very well.
Thank you, sir.
Oh, but with your kind permission, we must dance again. That dance was over too quickly, don't you think?
I do.
Oh, but wait. Look at my friend Darcy. He's not dancing. Well, he is a wonderful fellow, but sometimes he has to be encouraged to let down his guard.
Ah.
Who is the young lady sitting behind her?
Oh, that is my sister, Lizzie.
I will urge him to dance with her. But remember, you must save your next dance for me.
You have my word.
Come, Darcy. I hate to see you standing about in this stupid manner. You'd much better dance.
Your sisters are engaged, and there is not another woman in the room whom it would not be a punishment for me to stand up with.
But upon my honour, friend, I have never seen so many pleasant girls in my life as I have seen this evening.
You are dancing with the most handsome girl in the room.
Miss Bennet. She is the most beautiful creature I ever beheld. But there is one of her sisters sitting down just behind you who is very pretty and, I dare say, very agreeable. Do let me ask my partner to introduce her.
What do you mean? Her? She is tolerable enough, but not handsome enough to tempt me.
Lizzie, will you not dance now? Mr. Bingley says you must dance with Mr. Darcy.
It appears I am not handsome enough to warrant Mr. Darcy's attentions.
What?
I heard Mr. Darcy say that he could not bear to look at my inferior features for the duration even of a dance.
Oh, surely not.
Do not fear, Jane. My heart is not broken. Suffice to say, I fear Mr. Darcy, for all his 10,000 a year, is proud, and I do not feel cordially at all towards him. There, at least, we have something in common.
Oh, my dear Mr. Bennet, we have had a most delightful evening. Oh, I wish you'd been there. Jane was so admired. Everybody said how well she looked, and Mr. Bingley danced with her twice. Oh, she was the only creature in the room he asked a second time. First of all, he asked Charlotte Lucas. Oh, I was so vexed to see him stand up with her. However, he did not admire her at all. Indeed, nobody can, you know. Oh, my dear. Oh, I am quite delighted with Mr. Bingley. He is so excessively handsome, and his sisters are charming women. I never in my life saw anything more elegant than their dresses.
Wife, can you not see that I'm sleeping?
You would not believe the shocking rudeness of his friend, Mr. Darcy. He snubbed poor Lizzie. But I can assure you that Lizzie does not lose much by not suiting his fancy, for he is a most disagreeable, horrid man. So high and conceited that there was no enduring him.
Oh, Lizzie, Mr. Bingley is just what a young man ought to be. Sensible, good-humoured, lively, and I never saw such lovely manners.
He is also handsome, which a young man ought likewise to be, if he possibly can. And rich, which will please our mother.
Oh, she thinks only of our futures, since father cannot provide for us.
Oh, let us not talk of the parlous state of our inheritance. We shall all be impoverished old maids, I know, but there'll be plenty of time to mourn that. For now... I want only to hear of Mr. Bingley and his admiration for you, dear sister.
I must admit, I was very much flattered by his asking me to dance a second time. I did not expect such a compliment.
What could be more natural than his asking you again? He cannot help seeing you at least five times as pretty as every other woman in the room. Certainly he is very agreeable, and I give you leave to like him. You've liked many a stupider person.
Oh, Lizzie.
In fact, I never heard you speak ill of a human being in my life.
I would not want to be too hasty to judge anyone. But rest assured, I always speak my mind.
I know you do. Oh, hold still. Your hair is tangled here. And so you like Mr. Bingley's sisters, too? Their manners are not equal to his.
Certainly not at first. But they are very pleasing women when you converse with them. Miss Bingley is to live with her brother and keep his house.
Elizabeth listened in silence, but was not convinced.
I'm so pleased she'll be.
With more quickness of observation and less pliancy of temper than her sister, she was very little disposed to approve them. They were, in fact, very fine ladies, but proud and conceited. They were rather handsome, and had a fortune each of £20,000, and were therefore, in every respect, entitled to think well of themselves and meanly of others. Within a short walk of Longbourn lived a family with whom the Bennets were particularly intimate. Sir William Lucas had been formerly in trade in Meryton, where he had made a tolerable fortune and risen to the honour of knighthood. Lady Lucas was a very good kind of woman, not too clever to be a valuable neighbour to Mrs. Bennet. They had several children. The eldest of them, a sensible, intelligent young woman, was Elizabeth's intimate friend.
Charlotte, my dearest Lizzie.
You began the evening well, Charlotte. You were Mr. Bingley's first choice.
Yes, but he seemed to like his second better.
Oh, you mean Jane, I suppose, because he danced with her twice. Yes, he did seem to admire her. Indeed, I rather believe he did.
Yes, indeed. I heard Mr. Bingley proclaim Miss Bennet the prettiest girl in the room, without a doubt.
Oh, upon my word. Well, that seals it.
My hearings are more to the purpose than yours, Lizzie. Mr. Darcy is not so well worth listening to as his friend, is he?
Poor Lizzie, to be only just tolerable.
I beg you would not put it into Lizzie's head to be vexed by his ill treatment, for he is such a disagreeable man that it would be quite a misfortune to be liked by him. Another time, Lizzie, I would not dance with him if I were you.
I believe, ma'am, I may safely promise you never to dance with him.
It is strange, but his pride does not offend me so much as pride often does, because there is an excuse for it. One cannot wonder that so very fine a young man, with family, fortune, so much in his favour, should think highly of himself.
Pride is a very common failing, I believe. By all that I have ever read, I am convinced that it is very common indeed.
Yes, thank you, Mary.
Oh, I could easily forgive his pride, Charlotte, if it had not mortified mine.
Dear Lizzie, I am mortified only for him. Perhaps he will redeem himself next Saturday.
On what occasion?
My father is to throw a ball here.
Oh, heavens! Oh, Jane, we must repair at once to town, to the dressmakers.
Mama, I have been practising some new Scottish airs that I will be pleased to play at the assembly.
Oh, Mary, dear, you shall study yourself to death one of these days. I declare I don't know where you get it from.
I assume this is a compliment, which I thank you for, Mother.
Mama, I need some satin trim for my blue gown.
And I refuse to wear one of my sister's old dresses to the ball. I must have my own, Mama.
Oh, yes, 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 you must, Lydia. Oh, there is so much to do, I barely know where to begin.
Well, when shall we go to the dressmakers?
Lizzie, will you walk in the lane with me?
With pleasure.
Oh, Charlotte. It is clear to me that Mr. Bingley does admire her. And if I know Jane, she's already on her way to being in love. However, Jane unites great strength of feeling with a serene composure of temper. A gentleness which is sometimes misunderstood.
I think it a disadvantage to be so very guarded. In 9 cases out of 10, a woman had better show more affection than she feels. Bingley likes your sister undoubtedly, but he may never do more than like her if she does not encourage him.
But she is encouraging, as much as she can be.
Jane should make the most of every half an hour in which she can command his attention. When she is secure of him, there'll be reason for falling in love as much as she chooses.
Your plan is a good one when nothing is in question but the desire of getting a rich husband. But these are not Jane's feelings. She's not acting by design.
But why should she not want a rich husband? It is not a sin. Sometimes it is a necessity.
Charlotte, money cannot be the first consideration.
Then what is?
Happiness, of course. If by happy fortune the man she loves also happens to be rich, then all is to the good.
And if he is poor? What are the chances of happiness then?
You're trying to vex me, I know it, and I shall not fall into your trap. There could be no happiness in marriage without love. There, I have said it. I'd rather be poor and single than marry a man I did not love. And I know Jane is of the same mind.
Well, I wish Jane success with all my heart, but in my opinion, happiness in marriage is entirely a matter of chance.
You make me laugh, Charlotte. But I know you're only trying to provoke me. I don't believe for one minute that you would ever act in this premeditated way yourself.
Sir William.
Mrs. Bennet. Lizzie, I hope everything meets with your approval tonight, madam.
Oh, you spoil us with your hospitality, Sir William. And yet I could not help but notice there are none of those delicious almond buns you served last time.
Mother!
Oh, I leave all the domestic arrangements to Lady Lucas.
Indeed, and I know it is an onerous task for her. I delight in domestic arrangements altogether and would think nothing of a special journey to the bun house to please my guests, but la-di-da, we are all different. Oh, look, Lizzie. He was that horrid young man, Mr. Darcy.
Mother, speak more gently.
I wonder you invited him at all, Sir William. I'm sure he thinks us all beneath him. It is just as well he does not get to taste your buns, sir, as I'm sure he would consider them inferior. Good evening, Mr. Darcy.
Good evening, Mrs. Bennet. Miss Bennet, Sir William.
Mr. Darcy.
Well, I'm sure I don't know why you wish to speak with us, Mr. Darcy.
Mother, look how well Mr. Bingley and Jane dance together.
Occupied in observing Mr. Bingley's attentions to her sister, Elizabeth was far from suspecting that she was herself becoming an object of some interest. Mr. Darcy had at first scarcely allowed her to be pretty. But no sooner had he made it clear to himself and to his friends that she had hardly a good feature in her face, than he began to find it rendered uncommonly intelligent by the beautiful expression in her dark eyes.
Your sister dances well.
Oh. If you will excuse me, Mr. Darcy, I am urgently wanted elsewhere. And if you take offence at that, I'm sure it will be of your own choosing.
Mother, I'm sure Mr. Darcy infers nothing by your leaving us.
I'm not afraid of you, young man.
Mum.
Welcome. Welcome to my home, Mr. Darcy.
Sir William.
What a charming amusement this is for young people. Mm. But, my dear Lizzie, why are you not dancing? Mr. Darcy, you must allow me to present this young lady to you as a very desirable partner. You cannot refuse to dance, I am sure, when such beauty is before you.
Miss Bennet, will you allow me the honour...
Indeed, Sir William, I have not the least intention of dancing.
Why ever not? Do you have sore feet? I suffer terribly with chilblains
myself. It has nothing to do with my feet.
I will not press you on the matter if you are disinclined.
Ah, but you excel so much in the dance, Miss Eliza, that it is cruel to deny me the pleasure of seeing you.
Well, I would not disappoint you, Sir William.
Don't you like to dance, Miss Bennet?
Oh, I love to dance. When I have a willing partner.
But I am willing. Of course, I cannot answer for my talent in dancing.
Yeah, you dance very well, sir. But I'm afraid you do not enjoy it. No. I do not discern any pleasure in your countenance. You look rather stern, in fact.
But it's true that my face is difficult to read.
Whereas I am an open book. I wonder which of us has the advantage. Alas, if I'm happy, I cannot disguise it.
I would like to see that.
You must give me occasion to be happy, then. I am by nature inclined to be positive. I very rarely take offence at people, and I'm sure I can never bear a grudge. But I cannot bear rudeness. Have I stunned you into silence? Forgive me. I imagine it must be very hard for you to be here.
How so?
I imagine that habitually you move in very different circles.
Well, not so different.
I have a feeling you are not naturally inclined to pass your time in dancing and balls and such frippery. I imagine you are even now considering how insupportable it would be to pass many evenings in this manner.
You imagine many things. But you are totally wrong, I assure you. My mind was more agreeably engaged.
Alas, we are at an end, sir. But thank you. You dance very well.
So do you. Almost as well as you converse.
Oh, I like to talk, it is true, and I make no apologies for it.
Neither should you.
Well, Mr. Darcy, we have acquitted ourselves decently, and now we can part. Despite our early misgivings, I can now report the whole event passed without incident. Now, if you'll excuse me.
Mr. Darcy, I've come to save you. What a vulgar affair this is.
Miss Bingley.
I imagine you're thinking you cannot stay here a moment longer. Am I right?
No. I was thinking of the very great pleasure a pair of fine eyes and the face of a pretty woman can bestow.
Whose fine eyes move you to such poetry, sir? Pray do tell.
Miss Elizabeth Bennet.
I'm all astonishment. How long has she been such a favourite? When am I to wish you joy?
A lady's imagination is very rapid.
Nay, let me be the first to congratulate you. You will certainly have a very charming mother-in-law.
The village of Longbourn was only 1 mile from Meryton, a most convenient distance for the young ladies, who were usually tempted thither 3 or 4 times a week, principally to pay their duty to their mother's sister, Mrs. Phillips, who lived there, and also to visit the milliner's shop nearby. The two youngest of the family, Catherine and Lydia, were particularly frequent in these attentions. Their minds were more vacant than their sister's, and when nothing better offered, a walk to Meryton was necessary to amuse their morning hours. However, their aunt was by no means the only draw there. The two girls were bursting with excitement at the recent arrival of a militia regiment in the neighbourhood. It was to remain the whole winter, and Meryton was the headquarters.
Mama, Mama, you should see them. They wear a dark blue jacket with bright red epaulets. Oh.
And their trouser legs are very tight. It is the fashion, you know, with great big riding boots up to the knee.
Oh, how very becoming.
I am sure they are the best-looking regiment in the country. Oh. Aunt Phillips agrees with me. They are all very tall, of course. It is a condition of their joining.
And Mama, Aunt Phillips says that she's asked Colonel Forster and Captain Carter to dine on Tuesday.
And there are hints that Colonel Forster may be getting married.
No.
Oh, have no fear, Mama. He's far too old for either of us. And he has a moustache.
Oh, no. I am particularly admiring of Captain Carter. He has curly blonde hair and he looks so becoming in his regimental.
Oh, I'm sure he's very dashing. Have you spoken to him?
I have. Curtsied to him and he bowed right back.
Sure. He said good morning and winked at me.
He did not.
He did too.
Kitty and Lydia, you must be two of the silliest girls in the country. I have suspected it for some time. But now I am convinced.
Papa!
I am astonished, my dear, that you should be so ready to think your own children silly.
If my children are silly, I must hope to be always aware of it.
My dear Mr. Bennet, you must not expect such girls to have the sense of their mother and father. I remember the time when I liked a red coat myself very well. And indeed, I do still at my heart.
Mr. Bennet was prevented from replying by the entrance of the footman with a note for Miss Bennet. It came from Netherfield.
Well, Jane, what is it about? What does he say? Well, Jane, make haste and tell us. Make haste, my love.
It is from Miss Bingley. Oh. She invites me to dine today with her and her sister. Her brother and the gentleman are to dine with the officers.
Oh,
with the officers? I wonder Aunt Phillips did not tell us of that.
Mr. Bingley dining out? Well, that is very unlucky.
Can I have the carriage?
No, my dear. You had better go on horseback, because it seems likely to rain, and then you will have to stay all night.
Oh, Mama, I had much rather go in the coach.
But, my dear, your father absolutely cannot spare the carriage.
Oh. Jane had not been gone long before it rained hard. Her sisters were uneasy for her, but her mother was delighted.
This was a lucky idea of mine indeed.
Till the next morning, however, she was not aware of all the felicity of her contrivance. Breakfast was scarcely over when a servant from Netherfield brought a note for Elizabeth.
Jane is unwell. She caught a chill yesterday. They've called out a doctor to see her.
Well, my dear, if your daughter should have a dangerous fit of illness, if she should die, it will be a comfort to know it was all in pursuit of Mr. Bingley.
People do not die of little trifling colds.
I will go to see her.
But how will you get there? You cannot have the coach, and you are no horsewoman, Lizzie.
I shall walk.
How can you be so silly? In all the mud and dirt, you will not be fit to be seen when you get there.
I shall be fit to see Jane, which is all I want.
Oh!
And walk she did, crossing field after field at a quick pace, jumping over stiles and springing over puddles with impatient activity, and finding herself at last within view of Netherfield with weary ankles, dirty stockings, and a face glowing with the warmth of exercise, she was shown into the breakfast parlour.
Miss Elizabeth Bennet.
Miss Bennet.
Evans, look at you.
I've come to see my sister.
Did you drag yourself through a river to get here? You look really quite wild, my dear.
I walked.
From your house? But that is 3 miles.
3 miles in the mud, and you came by yourself. How incredible.
Have you eaten, Miss Bennet? Will you join us?
No, indeed. I'm here to see Jane. How is she?
The apothecary has just left. She slept ill, I'm afraid, and she's still feverish. I think it were better you stayed with her till she is well enough to move. I will make all the arrangements. Please say you'll stay to comfort her.
I would be happy to, sir.
Excellent. She will be very pleased to see you. Let me take you to her.
Oh, thank you.
Well, did you ever see such a thing, Mr. Darcy? Why would she be scampering about the country simply because her sister has a cold? Her hair so untidy, so blousy. I hope you saw her petticoat. 6 inches deep in mud. I'm afraid, Mr. Darcy, that this adventure has rather affected your admiration of her bright eyes.
Not at all. They were brightened by the exercise.
You think so?
Elizabeth passed the chief of the night in her sister's room. But by the morning, Jane had still not recovered sufficiently to return home. Therefore, Elizabeth requested that a note be sent to her mother to visit Jane. Mrs. Bennet, accompanied by her youngest girl, reached Netherfield soon after the family breakfast. Had she found Jane in any apparent danger, Mrs. Bennet would have been very miserable. But being satisfied on seeing her that her illness was not alarming, she had no wish of her recovering immediately and returning home at all.
Oh, Mr. Bingley, Jane is a good deal too ill to be moved. We must trespass a little longer on your kindness.
Oh, please do, Mum. My sister, I am sure, will not hear of her removal.
You may depend upon it, madam, that Miss Bennet will receive every possible attention while she remains with us.
Oh, I am sure if it was not for such good friends, I do not know what would become of her, for she is very ill indeed, and suffers a vast deal. There were the greatest patience in the world, which is always the way with her, for she has, without exception, the sweetest temper I ever met with. I often tell my other girls that they are nothing to her.
Oh,
you have a sweet room here, Mr. Bingley, and a charming prospect over the gravel walk. I do not know a place in the country that is equal to Netherfield. You will not think of quitting it in a hurry, I hope, though you have but a short lease.
No, whatever I do is done in a hurry, and therefore if I should resolve to quit Netherfield, I should probably be off in 5 minutes. At present, I consider myself as quite fixed here.
That is exactly what I should have supposed of you.
I did not know that you were a studier of character, Miss Bennet.
Nothing amuses me more, Mr. Darcy.
Oh, now I fear you think me impulsive and shallow.
No, she does not. Lizzie, remember where you are and do not run on in the wild manner that you are wont to do at home. But, Mr. Bingley, you must be so pleased to be here in the country.
But living in the country must frustrate your study, Miss Bennet. Here one moves in a very confined and unvarying society.
That is a harsh view, sir. And for me, people themselves change so much that there is always something new to be observed in them.
When I am in the country, I never wish to leave it, and when I am in the town, it is pretty much the same. They each have their advantages, and I can be equally happy in either.
That is because you have a charming disposition, sir.
Oh.
Whereas that gentleman seems to think the country has nothing to recommend it at all.
Indeed, Mama, you are mistaken. You quite mistook Mr. Darcy. He only meant that there was not such a variety of people to be met with in the country as in the town, which you must acknowledge to be true.
Well, certainly, my dear.
But, Mama, shall we sit with dear Jane again? She's been a long time alone.
No. I think it were better we left her to rest.
Mr. Bingley, I hope you have not forgot you promised us a ball. We have nothing to look forward to.
Oh, no, indeed. As soon as your sister is recovered, you can name the day of the ball yourself. But you would not wish to be dancing while your sister was ill.
Oh, yes. It were much better to wait till Jane is well again.
Yeah.
By that time, Captain Carter will most likely be in Meryton again.
I see you follow the movements of the local regiment with great interest, Miss Bennet.
I hope I do. Meryton would be a very dull place without them, I know that.
Well, Mr. Bingley, I cannot thank you enough for your kindness to dear Jane. And as I say, I do fear it will be some days before she is returned once more to us.
She is welcome.
Shall I see you out, Mama?
Oh, it is a shame to leave,
but
though.
But Pa will be missing you. I shall send news first thing tomorrow as to Jane's condition.
Oh, be sure not to move her, though, Lizzie, till she is clear of this. She will be weak for days. I once had a chill that laid me out for a month.
Goodbye, Mom.
Goodbye to you all. Mr. Bingley, forgive me for troubling you with Lizzie all this time, in addition to dear Jane. Goodbye, Miss Bingley. And Mr. Darcy? I nearly forgot about you.
Goodbye, Mum.
Are we to play three-card or five-card tricks?
Oh, three-card, lest we are here all night.
Shall I deal?
Oh, Miss Bennet, how sad that you could not join us for dinner.
Oh, I didn't want to leave Jane.
Is she any better?
Still feverish. She's more unwell than I expected. But she's asleep now, thankfully.
We were about to play cards. Will you join us?
Thank you. But I'd rather amuse myself with a book. I shall sit by the fire and read.
Miss Eliza Bennet despises cards. She's a great reader and has no pleasure in anything else.
On the contrary, I take pleasure in many things.
Oh, I have a wonderful hand. I shall bet half my counters. Look how reckless I am. Speaking of reading, Mr. Darcy, do you not have a delightful library at Pemberley?
Well, I hope it is. It has been the work of many generations of my family. Ah, I have no hand to speak of. Perhaps I will read, too.
How is your sister? Is Miss Darcy much grown since the spring?
She is now about Miss Elizabeth Bennet's height.
Oh, I long to see her again. She's so very accomplished with her sewing and her music.
I must see your hand, sister. It is amazing to me how young ladies can have patience to be so very accomplished as they all are. Ah, I have three aces. I'm afraid I've trumped you.
Oh, you beast. Kneel again.
I'm afraid I cannot agree with you, Bingley. I cannot boast of knowing more than half a dozen women who are really accomplished.
Pray so, what do you understand by the term accomplished?
An accomplished woman must have a thorough knowledge of music, singing, drawing, dancing, and the modern languages. And beside all this, she should have a certain something in her air and manner of walking, the tone of her voice, for the word accomplished to be really deserved. And she must add something yet more substantial in the improvement of her mind by extensive reading.
I'm no longer surprised that you're only knowing six accomplished women, Mr. Darcy. I rather wonder at your knowing any.
Are you so severe upon your own sex as to doubt the possibility of all this?
I never saw such a woman, that is all. And I would hate to live up to such a vision of perfection myself.
Oh, with all this talk of talents, perhaps one of you ladies will oblige us with a little music.
I'm sure Miss Bingley far exceeds my limited accomplishments on the pianoforte.
Will you indulge us, sister?
Very well, if it please you.
While Miss Bingley played, Elizabeth could not help observing as she turned over the pages in her book how frequently Mr. Darcy's eyes were fixed on her. She hardly knew how she could be an object of admiration to so great a man, and yet that he should look at her because he disliked her was still more strange. She could only imagine, however, at last, that she drew his attention because there was something about her more wrong and reprehensible than in any other person present.
Miss Bennet, how can we continue to sit and read? Don't you feel a great inclination now to dance a reel? Do I amuse you?
Such spontaneous merriment from you surprised me, that is all.
Do you care to dance, then?
I fear you want me to say yes. You might have the pleasure of despising my taste. But I always delight in overthrowing those kind of schemes and cheating a person of their premeditated contempt. I've therefore made up my mind to tell you that I do not want to dance a reel at all, and I'll despise me if you dare.
Indeed, I do not dare.
I do not care to play any longer. Miss Bennet, can I perhaps persuade you to take a turn about the room with me? I assure you it is very refreshing after sitting so long in one attitude.
Very well.
Last captured the attention of Mr. Darcy. Will you join us, sir?
I fear my joining you will defeat the object of the exercise.
Whatever can you mean?
mean, sir? Do you know what he means, Miss Bennet?
Not at all. But depend upon it, he means to be severe on us. And our surest way of disappointing him will be to ask nothing about it.
Come, come. Mr. Darcy, how do you mean to criticise us for taking a turn about the room?
You either choose this method of passing the evening because you are in each other's confidence and have secret affairs to discuss.
We most certainly do not.
Or you walk because you are conscious that your figures appear to the greatest advantage in walking, and I can admire you much better as I sit by the fire.
Oh, very well said, sir.
Oh, how shocking. I think they mean to laugh at us. Let me join you, gentlemen. I dearly love a laugh.
Miss Bennet, I believe you like to ridicule others.
No, indeed. I hope I never ridicule what is wise or good, but foolishness and nonsense, I laugh at them whenever I can.
I have always tried to avoid those weaknesses which expose a person to ridicule.
Which weaknesses do you speak of, Mr. Darcy? Vanity and pride, perhaps.
Vanity is a weakness indeed. But pride, where there is a real superiority of mind, pride will always be kept in check.
So, your examination of Mr. Darcy is over, Miss Bennet. And what do you conclude?
I am perfectly convinced that Mr. Darcy has no defect. He owns it himself.
No, indeed, I have made no such claim. I have faults enough, but they are not, I hope, of understanding. My temper I dare not vouch for. It is, I believe, too uncompromising. I cannot forget the follies and vices of others so soon as I ought, nor their offences against myself. My good opinion, once lost, is lost forever.
That is a failing indeed.
Will you laugh at me for it?
No, indeed, you have chosen your fault well. I really cannot laugh at it.
There is, I believe, in every person a natural defect which not even the best education can overcome.
And yours is a propensity to hate everybody.
And yours is willfully to misunderstand them.
Come, let us have some more music. Miss Bennet, can we prevail upon you now?
I'm afraid, sir, I have a more pressing duty to my sister. I must wish you all good night.
Oh, please, send her all our good wishes for a peaceful night.
I will.
Good night, Miss Bennet.
Good night, sir.
The morrow brought good news with it. Jane was much improved and well enough to travel.
You look very pale. Perhaps one more night.
Yeah, you are too kind, but really my mother will be anxious for our return.
And even if she is not, we would not outstay our welcome.
As you wish.
To Mr. Darcy, their departure was welcome.
Thank you.
Elizabeth attracted him more than he liked.
Thank you.
He wisely resolved to be particularly careful that no sign of admiration should now escape him. Steady to his purpose, he would not even look at her. Elizabeth, on the other hand, took leave of the whole party in the liveliest spirits.
Mr. Bingley, we are indebted to you. Goodbye.
Oh, goodbye.
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 Oh, no! Won't you want to stay at least till next Tuesday?
Ah, the natural order has been restored.
Oh, we met Colonel Forster's fiancée while you were ill, Jane, and she is very young. It is most surprising.
No more than 2 or 3 years older than I. And imagine this, she is actually taller than Colonel Forster by a good couple of inches.
She is very, very tall.
She and I are going to be great friends.
I have suffered too long with such nonsense, Elizabeth and Jane. Please, in the name of all things good, restore some sense to the proceedings for me.
But Catherine and Lydia had not finished. They had much to report about the daily movements of a certain regiment, and at the earliest opportunity, they persuaded their sisters to join them in a trip to Meryton.
Over there, Kitty, look! Officers! Oh, but see, Mr. Denny has returned from London!
Lydia, please use more discretion.
But who's the gentleman with Mr. Denny?
He is very handsome. I've not seen him before.
I don't know, but I'm going to find out. I shall cross the road as if I had business in the milliner's shop. Watch me.
Lydia, please. They're looking at you. Please let us walk on.
Ah, Mr. Denny. What a pleasant surprise. How was your trip to London?
Oh, very good. But allow me to introduce my friend, Mr. Wickham, who has returned with me.
I'm happy to say he's accepted a commission in our corps.
Then I look forward to seeing you in your regimentals, Mr. Wickham.
Thank you, Miss...
Bennett. I am with my four sisters. Come here, sisters. We are all Miss Bennets, though I'm the youngest.
Good day to the Miss Bennets.
Welcome to Meryton, sir.
Thank you. After London life, it is a tonic.
It is Mr. Bingley, Jane. Mr. Bingley.
And that stuck-up Mr. Darcy is with him.
Miss Bennet. Ladies. Oh, what a pleasant surprise. I hope I find you fully recovered, Miss Bennet.
Quite so.
Indeed, we were on our way to Longbourn to inquire after you.
I'm happy to have the opportunity to thank you. You were so kind to me.
Oh, the pleasure was all mine. Denny, good day to you.
And to you, sir. Good day, Mr. Darcy. May I introduce Mr. Wickham, gentlemen?
I will not... Good day to you.
The same to you.
We should set off. Bingley.
Good day, Miss Bennet. I'm so pleased to see you well.
Shall we walk on, ladies?
Lead the way.
Did you see that?
I have never seen Mr. Darcy look so uncomfortable.
And Mr. Wickham turned pale as a ghost. What can be the meaning of this?
They must have prior acquaintance of each other.
I'm intrigued now. I mean to find out. The very next evening at a gathering at their Aunt Philip's, the girls had the pleasure of hearing that Mr. Wickham had accepted their uncle's invitation and was then in the house.
Miss Bennet, I cannot believe my eyes. How can it be that such an attractive young woman languishes in the corner of the room alone?
I assure you I do not languish, sir. It is not in my nature. Besides, I hope you mean to join me.
I thought you would never ask.
You do not wish to play?
I'm not one for gaming. Besides, I have much to learn about my new neighbours, and I have a feeling you are the person to tell me.
I shall do my best. What would you like to know?
How far is Netherfield from Meryton?
About 2 miles.
Very good. And how long has Mr. Darcy been staying there?
About a month. He is a man of a very large property in Derbyshire, I understand.
Yes, Pemberley is very grand. You could not have met with a person more capable of giving you certain information on that head than myself, for I have been connected with his family from my infancy. You may well be surprised, Miss Bennet, at such an assertion after seeing the very cold manner of our meeting. Are you much acquainted with Mr. Darcy?
As much as I ever wished to be. I find him very disagreeable.
Oh, well, I have known him too long to give an impartial judgment of his character.
But he's not at all liked in Hertfordshire. Everyone is disgusted by his pride.
I wonder whether he is likely to be in this county much longer.
I hope your plans will not be affected by his being in the neighbourhood.
Oh, no. It is not for me to be driven away by Mr. Darcy. If he wishes to avoid seeing me, he must go. We are not on friendly terms, but I have no reason for avoiding him.
Oh, let us not speak of a subject which pains you.
No, no. I would like to tell you. His father, Miss Bennet, the late Mr. Darcy, was one of the best men that ever breathed. The truest friend I ever had. You know, a military life was not what I was intended for. The church ought to have been my profession. The late Mr. Darcy bequeathed me a living in his church. He was my godfather and excessively attached to me. He meant to provide for me amply and thought he had done it. But when the time came for me to take residence, the position of clergyman was given elsewhere.
Good heavens, but how could that be? Why did you not seek legal redress?
There was just such an informality in the terms of the bequest as to give me no hope from the law. A man of honour could not have doubted the intention, but Mr. Darcy chose to doubt it.
This is quite shocking. But what could have been his motive?
A thorough, determined dislike of me. Had the late Mr. Darcy loved me less, his son might have borne with me better.
I had not thought Mr. Darcy as bad as this.
We were born in the same parish, with the same park. The greatest part of our youth was passed together. My father was very close to the late Mr. Darcy and devoted his time to the care of Pemberley property. It was just before my father's death that Mr. Darcy gave him a voluntary promise of providing for me. As much as a debt of gratitude to my father as of affection to me.
I think it is his abominable pride which has made Mr. Darcy unjust to you.
Pride has been his best friend.
Can such pride ever have served him well?
Well, it has led him to be liberal and generous. He also has a brotherly pride and is a careful and kind guardian of his sister.
What sort of a girl is Miss Darcy?
She is too much like her brother. Very, very proud. As a child, she was affectionate and pleasing and extremely fond of me. She is nothing to me now.
I'm astonished at his intimacy with Mr. Bingley.
Do you know Mr. Bingley?
Not at all.
He is a sweet-tempered, amiable, charming man. He cannot know what Mr. Darcy is.
Probably not, though Darcy can please when he chooses.
I am shocked, sir. Though your account confirms what I have already begun to think of Mr. Darcy.
I thank you for hearing me out. But we are called to supper. Will you take my arm?
Gladly, sir.
Poor Mr. Wickham, Jane. He has been used abominably.
But, Lizzie, we have not heard Mr. Darcy's side. It would be wrong of us to conjecture the causes or circumstances which may have alienated them without allowing him to defend himself. My dearest Lizzie, only think in what a disgraceful light this account places Mr. Darcy. No man of common humanity, no man who had any value for his character, could be capable of it. Can his most intimate friends be so excessively deceived in him? No.
I can more easily believe that Mr. Bingley has been deceived by his friend, that the Mr. Wickham would invent such a history of himself as he gave me tonight.
I hope you are wrong, but perhaps we will have more opportunity to discover the truth next Tuesday.
How so?
Mr. Bingley has invited us all to a ball at Netherfield.
I do not see him.
Who?
Mr. Wickham. He is not here. The presence of Mr. Darcy has kept him away. Or perhaps he was purposely omitted.
I am certain Mr. Bingley would not behave so ungraciously.
There is Lydia. Perhaps she has some information from the officers.
Oh, Lydia.
Where is Mr. Wickham?
Oh, he's gone to town on business. Oh, Kitty! Kitty, Captain Carter is over there. Come!
You see? There is an innocent explanation, Lizzie.
I do not imagine his business would have called him away just now if he did not wish to avoid a certain gentleman here. Here is Mr. Bingley. Jane, you must question him about this affair.
Miss Bennet, would you care to dance?
Gladly, sir. Lizzie!
Will no one dance with you either?
Oh, Charlotte, I have so much to tell you.
A matter settled between Mr. Bingley and Jane. I see he has eyes for no one else.
My mother is convinced, but I fear Jane may meet obstacles in the form of Mr. Bingley's sisters. But no, I have to tell you of Mr. Darcy. Pride is not the only sin he is guilty of. He has behaved so abominably.
Hush, Lizzie. Your speech is ill-timed.
Miss Bennet, might I have the pleasure of this dance?
Elizabeth, Mr. Darcy waits on you.
Yes. Yes, I suppose. Of course.
Shall we take our place in the set?
The quadrille is not my favourite dance. It is your turn to say something now, Mr. Darcy. You ought to make some comment on the size of the room or the number of couples.
Whatever you wish me to say, consider it said.
Very well. That reply will do for the present. Now we may be silent.
Do you and your sisters walk often to Meryton?
Yes. When you met us there the other day, we'd just been forming a new acquaintance. Mr. Wickham.
Mr. Wickham is blessed with such happy manners as may ensure his making friends. Whether he may be equally capable of holding on to them is less certain.
He's been so unlucky as to lose your friendship, and in a manner which he is likely to suffer from all his life. You're very quiet, sir. I remember hearing you say that you hardly ever forgave, that your resentment once created was unappeasable. You're very cautious, I suppose, to its being created.
I am.
And never allow yourself to be blinded by prejudice.
I hope not. Madam, may I ask to what these questions tend?
Merely to the illustration of your character. I'm trying to make it out.
I would urge you not to tax yourself further on the subject.
Why not?
I can readily believe that reports may vary greatly with respect to me.
That does not trouble you.
I am often troubled, ma'am, but I hope I know what I am. Besides, I would not wish you to stray into impertinence. I would save you from such an accusation. It would do you no credit. Good evening, Miss Bennet.
Eliza.
Miss Bingley.
So, I hear you're quite delighted with George Wickham. Your sister has been talking to me about him and asking me 1,000 questions, and I find that the young man omitted to tell you that he was the son of old Wickham, the late Mr. Darcy's steward. As to Mr. Darcy using him ill, it is perfectly false. From the contrary, he has always been remarkably kind to him, and it is George Wickham who has treated Mr. Darcy in an infamous manner. I pity you, Miss Eliza, for this discovery of your favourite's guilt.
I have heard you accuse him of nothing worse than of being the son of Mr. Darcy's steward, and of that I can assure you he informed me himself.
I beg your pardon.
Insolent girl. Jane.
Jane!
Jane, pray tell me, what have you learned about Mr. Wickham?
Mr. Bingley does not know the whole of the history, but he is perfectly convinced that Mr. Wickham is by no means a respectable man.
But Mr. Bingley does not know Mr. Wickham himself.
No, he never saw him till the other morning.
This account, then, is what he's heard from Mr. Darcy. I'm perfectly satisfied.
Oh, don't be so hasty to judge Mr. Darcy, Lizzie.
No, Jane. I'm afraid I'm determined to hate him. And neither you nor anyone else can persuade me to do otherwise.
In episode 1 of Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen, Mrs. Bennet was played by Samantha Spiro, Mr. Bennet by David Troughton, and Elizabeth by Pippa Nixon. Mr. Darcy was Jamie Parker, Mr. Bingley, Joshua Maguire, Jane Bennet, Lydia Wilson, and Miss Bingley, Fenella Woolgar. Lydia was Georgie Fuller, Kitty, Carrie Saleri, and Mary, Rosie Wyatt. Charlotte Lucas was Michelle Terry, Sir William Lucas, Sean Murray, Mr. Denny, Arthur Hughes, and Mr. Wickham, Joel McCormack. The narrator was Amanda Root. Pride and Prejudice is dramatised by Charlotte Jones and directed by Sally Avens.
As soon as Jane and Elizabeth returned home, Lydia was keen to inform them of all they had missed.
I have excellent news, capital news, and about a certain person that we all like. Can you guess? It is about dear Wickham. There is no danger of his marrying Mary King. She has gone down to her uncle at Liverpool, gone to stay. Wickham is safe.
Oh, and that lady is safe.
But the worst news of all is that the regiment are leaving Meryton in a fortnight's time. They're all going to Brighton.
What is to become of us?
I myself endured such a time 25 years ago. I cried for 2 days together when Colonel Miller's regiment went away.
If one could but go to Brighton. Oh. Mrs. Forster and I are now such good friends and she cannot bear to part with me.
Oh, Papa is so disagreeable and will not allow it.
A little sea bathing would set me up forever.
But tell us what happened to you all whilst you were away. Have you seen any pleasant men? Have you had any flirting? I was in great hopes that one of you would have got a husband before you came back. Jane will be quite an old maid, I declare.
Oh, Lydia.
She is almost 23. Lord, how ashamed I should be of not being married before 23.
We should unpack. Come, Jane.
Elizabeth's impatience to acquaint Jane with what had happened in Kent could no longer be overcome, and at length, resolving to suppress every particular in which her sister was concerned, she related to her the detail of Mr. Darcy's proposal to her.
Oh, my. I cannot disguise from you my surprise. Mm. Not that he should admire you, of course not, but I am sorry that he delivered his sentiments in a manner so little suited to recommend them.
You do not blame me for refusing him?
Oh, no.
But you blame me for having spoken so warmly of Wickham.
We did not know at the time that Wickham was so very bad. How could we have known?
Oh, Jane. I want to be told whether I ought to make our acquaintance in general understand Wickham's character.
Surely there can be no occasion for exposing him so dreadfully. To make his error public might ruin him forever.
I'm of the same opinion. Mr. Darcy has not authorised me to make this information public. Mm. Besides, Wickham and his regiment will soon be gone, and we will have no occasion to ever see him again.
Lizzie, pass me the scissors.
Mama! Oh, Mama! Wait till you hear. I have never been so excited in my life. Oh. I have received an invitation from Mrs. Forster. Oh. She wants me to accompany her to Brighton.
Oh, how delightful, Lydia, my love. Oh, our luck has changed.
What about me?
I am her friend, not you.
I cannot see why Mrs. Forster should not ask me as well as Lydia. I have just as much right to be asked as she has, and more.
Oh,
for I'm 2 years older.
Don't worry, I will write to you, Kitty.
Where is Father?
In his study. Oh, Lydia, we must pack at once and include all your fine dresses.
I think the temptations will be too great for her in Brighton. I think you should refuse to let her go.
Lizzie, dear. Lydia will never be easy till she has exposed herself in some public place or other, and we can never expect her to do it with so little expense or inconvenience to the family as under the present circumstances.
Father, if you do not take the trouble of checking her exuberant spirit, she will soon be beyond the reach of amendment. Her character will be fixed, and she will, at 16, be the most determined flirt that ever made herself and her family ridiculous.
But Lizzie, wherever you and Jane are known, you must be respected and valued. And you will not appear to less advantage for having a couple of, or I may say, three very silly sisters. Besides, we shall have no peace at Longbourn if Lydia does not go to Brighton. Let her go, then.
And so the regiment were to leave Meryton. On their very last day, some of the officers came to dine at Longbourn, and among their number was Mr. Wickham.
Miss Bennet, how could you go away from me for so long?
I'm sure you did not miss me a moment.
I was reassured only by the fact that you must be having a dreary time without me.
On the contrary, I spent a very pleasant time in Kent. In fact, we were joined there by Mr. Darcy and Colonel Fitzwilliam.
Ah, how did you find the Colonel?
I liked him very much.
His manners are very different from his cousins.
They are different. But I think Mr. Darcy improves on acquaintance.
Oh, he does. Especially when he is in the presence of his aunt. He lives in fear of her, you know. And of course he will want to forward the match between himself and Mr. Berg by any means possible.
I saw no signs of affection between him and Mr. Berg.
He does not need to feel anything for the lady to know that the match would be mutually beneficial.
Hello! May I raise a toast, ladies and gentlemen, to our brave and distinguished regiment who have served us so well. To the officers!
To the officers!
When the party broke up, Lydia returned with Mrs. Forster to Meryton, from whence they were to set out early the next morning. The separation between her and her family was rather more noisy than moving.
No, Kitty, for heaven's sake, stop that caterwauling. Go, my dear Lydia, and do as I would have done. Enjoy yourself as much as possible. Do it for me.
Oh, depend upon it, Mama. Mama.
Her proposed tour to the lakes was now the object of Elizabeth's happiest thoughts. But a fortnight before their intended departure, Elizabeth received a letter from her Aunt Gardiner.
Mr. Gardiner is prevented by business from setting out till a fortnight later than we had planned, and he must be in London again within a month. Therefore, we intend to go no farther north than Derbyshire.
You should know, Lizzie, that Lambton is situated within 5 miles of Pemberley, Mr. Darcy's residence. You've heard so much about the place, I'm sure you will like to visit.
Oh, do not presume because I've heard so much. What I mean to say is that I must go, and I'm tired of great houses. Really, I take no pleasure in fine carpets and satin curtains.
But the grounds are so delightful.
Do you know if Mr. Darcy is now in residence at Pemberley?
I inquired the same thing of his housekeeper when I was planning our trip. She wrote to me to say no, but alas, he is not expected this summer. Why do you ask?
No reason. But perhaps we should do as you have planned. I am curious to see Pemberley. Yes.
The hallway, you'll see, is decorated with miniature portraits of the family.
This is the late Mr. Darcy as a young man, is it not?
Oh, such a wonderful man. Mr. this day. Of course, you are a local girl, Mrs. Gardiner.
It is such a delight to be back. Mrs. Reynolds, thank you so much for taking the time to show us round.
How long have you been housekeeper here, ma'am?
Since the present, Mr. Darcy was a young boy. Of course, he's all grown up now. Couldn't ask for a better master. We expect him tomorrow with a large party of friends.
Tomorrow?
Lizzie, come and look at this portrait.
Ah, that is a young man who grew up on the estate, a Mr. Wickham, son of my late master's steward. He's gone into the army, I believe. But by all accounts, he's turned out wild. And that is my present master. And I have to say, very like him.
Lizzie, you can tell us whether it is like him or not.
Oh, does the young lady know Mr. Darcy?
A little.
And do you not think him a very handsome gentleman, ma'am?
Yes, he is.
And is Miss Darcy as attractive as her brother?
Oh, she is lovely and so accomplished.
Is your master much at Pemberley in the course of a year?
Not so much as I would wish, sir.
If your master would marry, you might see more of him.
Yes, ma'am, but I do not know who is good enough for him.
It is much to his credit that you should say so.
I say no more than the truth. I have never had a crossword from him in my life, and I've known him ever since he was 4 years old.
You were lucky in having such a master.
I could not wish for a better.
What date would you say the building was?
16th century, I'd say. One of the finest examples I've seen. Look at this.
Oh, no.
Miss Bennet? Miss Bennet?
Oh, Mr. Darcy,
Forgive me,
No, it is I.
You're in Derbyshire?
Yes. We were meant to visit the lakes, but we were prevented. I am here with my aunt and uncle. Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner.
Day to you, Mr. Darcy. What a wonderful estate you have here. Thank you, Mr. Gardiner. I hope we do it justice. Where are you staying?
Lambton. My wife's family are from there.
Really? I have just arrived myself.
We were informed you would not be here till tomorrow.
I had to change my plans. How are your family, Miss Bennet?
Very well.
Your sister, Jane?
She is... She remains at home.
Well, give her, give them all my regards. If you will excuse me, I should go. Good day to you.
Good day to you.
What a fine-looking man.
We should leave now.
Are you not feeling well, Miss?
But our carriage is not here yet, Lizzie. I ordered it for 5. But perhaps we can walk towards the woodland. Get out of this sun.
Yes. Yes, please. I should like to walk a little away from the house.
I should like to go around the whole park. I wonder how far that would be.
Oh, my dear. You know I am not a great walker. Not like Elizabeth.
There's trout in the stream. There. You see?
Hello.
Why, it's Mr. Darcy again.
Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner, forgive my abrupt nature before. I wanted to welcome you properly to Pemberley.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Darcy. You're most kind. Oh, and whilst you're here, you can answer our question. How large is the park?
10 miles round, as far as the eye can see.
10 miles? I cannot walk 10 miles.
But we can follow the path of the stream instead. It is a lovely route.
I've been admiring the trout.
My husband loves to fish.
Alas, I don't get much occasion for it. I work in town.
But, Mr. Gardiner, you must fish here as often as you choose. I can supply you with equipment. If you look down there by the elm tree, the trout are usually plentiful there.
What a generous offer. I would not want to put you to any trouble.
It would be my pleasure.
My dear, I must trouble you for your aunt.
Your arrival was unexpected.
I had business with my steward that I needed to attend to. The rest of my party will arrive tomorrow.
Your sister?
Georgiana, yes.
And others that you know. Mr. Bingley and his sisters. I should very much like to introduce my sister to you. And to your acquaintance during your stay. Will you allow me?
I should like that. Very much.
Georgiana, this is Miss Elizabeth Bennet, and her aunt and uncle, Mr. and Mrs. Gardner.
Miss Darcy was tall, and though little more than 16, her appearance was womanly and graceful. Elizabeth was amazed to discover that far from being proud, Miss Darcy was in fact exceedingly shy.
It is such a pleasure to meet you, Miss Darcy. Your brother speaks so highly of you.
Does he?
I've heard what an accomplished musician you are.
Oh, not really.
Your modesty is to your credit, but I know he is very proud of you.
That's such a lovely thing to say.
Will you pour tea for us, Georgiana?
I hope I shan't spill any.
It will not matter if you do. Mr. and Mrs. Gardner, may I introduce my dear friend Charles Bingley and his sister, Miss Caroline Bingley?
Oh, we have heard our niece Jane speak of you. How lovely to meet you.
Mr. Bingley? Miss Bingley?
Yes, Mrs. Gardner. It is a very long time since I had the pleasure of seeing Miss Bennet and her family. It was the 26th of November, as I recall, when we were all dancing together. Are all your sisters at Longbourn, Miss Bennet?
My sister Lydia is staying with friends in Brighton, but Jane and my other sisters are at home.
Dear Jane is looking after our four children. She is such a kind soul. And so beautiful, of course. My little girls dote on her.
So I hear the militia are removed from Meryton. That must be a great loss to your family.
My youngest sisters were sad, it is true.
But I thought there was someone in the regiment that you were particularly acquainted with. Surely you feel his loss?
No. Indeed, you are mistaken. I did not mourn the loss of any of their number in the slightest.
So we fish at noon, gentlemen.
Now there's a plan.
Can I help you to cake, Miss Bennet? Oh, this wretched cake is so crumbly.
Here, let me help you. We will make light work of it together.
Thank you.
Well, Georgiana, what did you make of her?
Miss Bennet? I liked her very much. She's so very pretty, too.
Really? I thought Eliza Bennet looked very ill this morning. Do you not think so, Mr. Darcy? I never in my life saw anyone so much altered as she is since the winter. She's grown so brown and coarse. I remember when we first knew her in Hertfordshire, how amazed we all were to find that she was reputed a beauty. And I particularly recollect you, Mr. Darcy, saying one night, she a beauty, I should as soon call her mother a wit. How we all laughed at that.
Yes, but that was only when I first knew her. For it is now many months since I have considered her as one of the handsomest women of my acquaintance. Will you excuse me?
Elizabeth had been a good deal disappointed in not finding a letter from Jane on their first arrival at Lambton. On the third morning, her anxiety was over, as she received two letters at once. They had just been preparing to walk as the letters came in, and her uncle and aunt, leaving her to enjoy them in quiet, set off by themselves.
Dearest Lizzie, something has occurred of a most unexpected and serious nature. It relates to poor Lydia. An express came from Colonel Forster last night to inform us that she was gone off to Scotland, to Gretna Green, with one of his officers, to own the truth, with Wickham. I am very, very sorry. Our poor mother is sadly grieved. They were off Saturday night about 12, but were not missed till yesterday morning at 8. Lydia left a few lines with Mrs. Forster, informing her of her intention. I must conclude now, as I cannot be long from poor mother. More as I have it.
Oh, Lydia.
Dearest Lizzie, I hardly know what I write, but I have bad news for you. Imprudent as a marriage between Mr. Wickham and our poor Lydia would be, we are now anxious to be assured it has taken place, for there is but too much reason to fear they are not gone to Gretna.
Colonel Forster came yesterday and told us something was said by Denny expressing his belief that Wickham never intended to go to Scotland or to marry Lydia at all. Colonel Forster set off intending to trace their route, which he did easily to Clapham, but no farther. Our distress, my dear Lizzie, is very great. Mother and father believe the worst, but I still have hopes that they will marry. Father is going to London with Colonel Forster instantly to try to discover her. Lizzie, am I allowed to say I long for your return? I fear Father will not be able to behave sensibly, such as his distress. My uncle's advice and assistance would mean everything to us right now.
Oh, where is my uncle? Come in, come in.
Miss Bennet.
Oh, I thought you were my uncle.
Whatever is the matter?
I must leave you. I must find my uncle. They are walking in the village.
I will not detain you for a moment, but please let me send a servant to find him.
Yes, please, send someone.
Excuse me.
Yes, sir?
Go and find Mr. and Mrs. Gardiner. They are on their way to Lambton. Tell them they must return on a matter of urgency.
Yes, sir.
Go with all speed. Please, let me call your maid.
No.
Or let me get you a glass of wine. You are not well.
I am. I'm only distressed by some dreadful news which I've received from Longbourn. I have just received a letter from Jane. My youngest sister has eloped with Mr. Wickham. They are run off together from Brighton. You know him too well to doubt the rest. He has no money, no connections, nothing that can tempt him to marry her. She is lost forever.
Good God.
When I think that I could have prevented it. I, who knew what he was. But I did not know that she had any particular feelings for him. Wretched girl, and it is all too late now.
I'm grieved. Shocked. But is it certain? Absolutely certain?
Yes. They left for Brighton together on Sunday night and were traced almost to London, but not beyond.
And what has been done? What has been attempted to recover her?
My father is gone to London and Jane has written for my uncle's immediate assistance. We shall be off, I hope, in half an hour. But nothing can be done. With such a man, I know nothing can be done. Please be so kind as to apologise for us to Miss Darcy, that I will not meet with her today. But do not tell her the circumstances. I would not wish to distress her.
Yes, yes, of course. I wish I could offer you some consolation. I hate to see you like this. If there was something I could do to alleviate...
I know. Thank you.
I will go. But I will hope for a good outcome.
Yes.
Take good care of yourself, Miss Bennet.
Mr. Darcy. I'm so sorry.
I am sorry too.
I shall never see him again.
Oh, Lizzie, I am glad you are here. Any news? Father is in London. He said he would not write again till there was something to report.
Let us not give way to anxiety. I shall leave today for London and join your father in the search.
Oh, brother, sister. Oh, what calamities. If I had been able to carry my point of going to Brighton with all my family, none of this would have happened. Poor dear Lydia had no one to look after her. And now here's Mr. Bennet gone away, and I know he will fight Wickham. And then he will be killed, and the Collinses will turn us out before he is cold in his grave.
Sister, you let your imagination run free.
Oh, no.
Let us go inside and take some tea together.
This is the note she left Mrs. Forster. Will you hear it?
I cannot think any worse of her than I already do.
My dear Harriet, you will laugh when you know where I am gone.
And I cannot help laughing myself at your great surprise. I am going to Gretna Green. And if you cannot guess with who, then you are a simpleton, for there is but one man in the world I love. You need not send them word at Longbourn of my going, for it will make the surprise the greater when I write to them and sign my name Lydia Wickham. What a good joke it will be!
thoughtless girl.
But at least it shows she was serious in her intention to be married to him.
What did Colonel Forster say? Had they no apprehension of anything before the elopement took place?
He said he had suspected some partiality, especially on Lydia's side, but nothing to give him any alarm.
And was Denny convinced that Wickham would not marry?
He denied any foreknowledge, and when pressed, he would not repeat his assertion as to their not marrying, which gives us room for hope.
Until Colonel Forster came himself, you all presumed she was married.
I felt a little uneasy about Wickham's conduct, but I did not doubt that he would do the honourable thing. Then we discovered that Kitty had known more than the rest of us. That in Lydia's last letter she had informed her of their being in love with each other for many weeks.
And did Colonel Forster appear to think ill of Wickham himself?
He did not speak so well of Wickham as he formerly did. He believed him imprudent and extravagant. It is said that he left Meryton greatly in debt.
Oh, Jane, had we been less secret? Had we told what we knew of him? This could not have happened.
We acted with the best of intentions.
What possessed her? She has no sense of shame, of duty, of propriety. And how low are we now sunk in the world's estimation by her actions?
We must not worry what the world thinks of us. Our only hope is that this marriage takes place.
The days passed slowly, and their anxiety did not diminish.
I have heard from your uncle.
Has he found them?
Alas, no. According to Colonel Forster, it seems Mr. Wickham does not have a single relation to call upon in London.
It does not surprise me.
And it seems he left Meryton with gambling debts in excess of £1,000.
Oh, but this is terrible.
Your uncle is still searching for them, but your father will return tomorrow. There is no reason for him to linger, and his spirits are very low. I am afraid I must leave you too, girls.
The children will want to see their father, of course.
You have done more than enough for us.
I wish I could do more.
When Mr. Bennet arrived, he had all the appearance of his usual philosophic composure. He said as little as he had ever been in the habit of saying. He made no mention of the business that had taken him away, and it was some time before his daughters had courage to speak of it.
I am sorry for what you must have endured, Father.
Who should suffer but myself? It has been my own doing, and I ought to feel it.
Do you suppose them to be in London?
Yes.
Lydia always wanted to go to London.
She is happy, then. And, Lizzie, I bear you no ill will for being justified in your advice to me.
You can console yourself that I'm not going to run away, Papa. If I should ever go to Brighton, I would behave better than Lydia.
You go to Brighton? I would not trust you so near as Eastbourne. No, Kitty. I've learned to be cautious. No officer is ever to enter my house again. Dances will be absolutely prohibited. In fact, you are never to stir out of doors till you can prove that you have spent 10 minutes of every day in a rational manner. Do not make yourself unhappy. If you are a good girl for the next 10 years, I will take you to a review at the end of them.
The next day, a letter arrived from Mr. Gardiner.
Oh, Papa, what news? Good or bad?
Read it aloud, for I hardly know myself what it is about.
My dear brother, they are not married, nor can I find any intention of them being so.
But I hope it will not be long before they are. These are the conditions of their marrying, brother. You must assure your daughter, by settlement, her equal share of the £5,000 secured among your children after your death. Then you must enter into an engagement of allowing her, during your life, £100 per annum. These are conditions which I had no hesitation in complying with, dependent only on your approval. You will deduce from this that Mr. Wickham's circumstances are not so hopeless as we feared. There will be some money, even when all his debts are discharged, to settle on my niece, in addition to her own fortune.
Wickham is not so undeserving after all.
Have you answered the letter?
No.
You must do it immediately, or I will do it for you.
I would like to know how I will ever repay my brother, for he must have discharged Wickham's debts. Wickham has not a sixpence of his own, and no man in his senses would marry Lydia on so slight a temptation as 100 a year and 50 after I am gone.
That is very true. But I fear it was not a small sum.
Wickham's a fool if he takes her with a farthing less than £10,000.
Oh, £10,000. But we could not repay half that sum.
I am sure he would not marry Lydia if he had not a real regard for her.
You will find me in my study.
I suppose we must be thankful that they are to marry. Though small is their chance of happiness. We should tell Mother.
Oh, my dear, dear Lydia. Oh, this is delightful indeed. She will be married at 16. Oh, my good, kind brother, I knew he would manage everything. Oh, how I long to see her. And dear Wickham, too. Oh, Mrs. Wickham. Oh, how well it sounds. Oh, but the clothes, the wedding clothes. Lizzie, my dear, run down to ask your father how much he will give her. Oh, here he is. I shall ask him myself. Oh, but Mr. Bennet, where will they live? Hay Park might do if the Gouldings would quit, or the great house at Stoke if the drawing room were larger. But Ashworth, it's too far off. I could not bear to have her 10 miles from me.
Mrs. Bennet, before you take any or all of these houses for your son and daughter, let us come to a right understanding. Into one house in this neighbourhood they shall never have admittance.
What?
Mine.
You strike me dead with your words, Mr. Bennet.
And I will not advance one guinea to buy new clothes for her either.
Oh.
And that is my final word on the subject.
Mr. Gardiner soon again wrote to his brother. He told him that Mr. Wickham had resolved on quitting the militia. It was his intention to join the regulars, and he had the promise of a post in another regiment now quartered in the north of England. Mr. Bennet and his daughters saw all the advantages of Wickham's removal from Hertfordshire, but Mrs. Bennet was not so well pleased with it.
To be so very far away from me. Now, you will have to let me see her, Mr. Bennet, before she is banished to the north.
I think perhaps, Father, that it would be appropriate for you to receive them. You should acknowledge Lydia's marriage for her sake, to show the world that she is settled now.
Jane is right. We should treat their union as if all were respectable.
Very well. We will none of us attend the ceremony, but I will send my permission for them to come once they are married.
Mr. and Mrs. Wickham.
Here I am, Mama. Oh, Lydia.
Oh, and what do you think of my husband?
Mr. Bennet.
Sir.
Mrs. Bennet. Or might I say Mother.
Oh, is he not a charming man?
Oh, how he melts my heart. Oh, dear, dear Wickham. I shall be honoured to be your mother. I always longed for a son.
And to think it is only 3 months since I saw you all. Good gracious, when I went away, I had no idea I should come back a married woman. Did you see my ring? Sisters, you must call me Mrs. Wickham now. And Jane, I must take your place now, and you must go lower because I am a married woman. I'm sure all my sisters must envy me. They must all go to Brighton. That is the place to get husbands.
Oh, I should have loved with all my heart to have been there with you, dearest Lydia, but I do not like you going to live so far from me.
Oh, you and Papa and all my sisters must come and see us. I dare say there will be many balls. Yes, I shall be able to get husbands for them all before the winter is over.
I thank you for my share of the favour, but I do not particularly like your way of getting husbands.
Oh, Lizzie, come, come, there is a wedding breakfast laid out for you on the terrace.
Oh, Mr. Wickham, it is so lovely.
Oh. Lizzie, why are you hiding away in here?
I'm not hungry.
Well, it is good that I have found you, as I never gave you an account of my wedding, I believe. Are you not curious to hear how it was managed?
I think there cannot be too little said on the subject.
You are so strange. But I shall tell you anyway, and I know I shall interest you, for there was someone there of your acquaintance. Not my aunt and uncle, I don't mean them. They were horrid, unpleasant, all the time I was with them. No, I mean Mr. Darcy.
Mr. Darcy?
Yes, he was at my wedding. He came with my dear Wickham, don't you know?
Oh, no. Now I recall it was meant to be a secret. I ought not to have said a word about it. I promised them so faithfully.
Then please say not another word on the subject.
Oh. You are my least favourite sister, Lizzie, to be sure.
What's the meaning of this? Why would he... I'll write to my aunt immediately and request an explanation.
Elizabeth had the satisfaction of soon receiving an answer to her letter. She was no sooner in the possession of it than, hurrying into the little copse where she was least likely to be interrupted, she sat down on one of the benches to read her aunt's reply.
My dear niece, on the very day of his arriving in London, Mr. Darcy called to tell Mr. Gardiner that he had found out where your sister and Mr. Wickham were. There is a lady, it seems a Mrs. Young, who was some time ago a governess to Miss Darcy. She owns a large house in Edward Street, which is where he discovered Lydia and Wickham. Mr. Darcy could not persuade Lydia to leave Wickham, although that was his first intention. Since such were her feelings, it only remained to secure a marriage between them. He and Wickham met several times, for they had much to discuss. It was settled that Wickham's debts would be paid by Mr. Darcy, amounting, I believe, to considerably more than £1,000, and on top of that, his new commission would be purchased. Mr. Darcy would not hear of Mr. Gardiner settling Wickham's debts, for he saw it as his duty. He said it was owing to him that Wickham's character had been generally misunderstood. But in spite of this, my dear Lizzie, you may rest assured that your uncle would never have yielded if we had not given him credit for another interest in the affair.
He did it for me.
I am afraid I interrupt you, dear sister.
No. No matter, I was leaving.
Shall we walk together, then?
Very well.
I hear you saw Pemberley in the summer.
Mm.
And you spoke with dear old Mrs. Reynolds. I don't suppose she mentioned me.
She did, in fact. She said that you had gone into the army, and she was afraid you had not turned out well.
She must be very old now, of course. I've heard she's prone to confusion.
Also, Mr. Darcy introduced us to his sister.
And do you like her?
Very much.
I had heard she has improved with age. I sense you are angry with me, sister. Come. I know you to be honest. Will you enumerate all my faults for me one by one? It gives me a heavy heart, for I was very much looking forward to being your brother. You amongst all your sisters.
Nothing will be gained by us being enemies.
Then I think we should be friends. Besides, Lydia and I leave tomorrow, and so we may not see each other for another 12 months.
Come. Let us not quarrel about the past. Here, take my arm. Brother.
With the removal of Mr. and Mrs. Wickham to his new commission in the north of England, life settled down to a more tranquil pace in the Bennet household. Jane and Elizabeth relished the return to the status quo. But Mrs. Bennet was always on the hunt for more drama to enliven the daily proceedings.
Mr. Bingley is returned. Jane, the housekeeper at Netherfield received orders to prepare for the arrival of her master last Tuesday. He is arrived. Well, not that I care about it, though, but who knows what will happen. I suppose I shall have to invite him to supper, whether I wish to or not. Well, don't detain me, for there is so much to do.
Jane?
Lizzie, I know I appear distressed, but I am not. I was only confused for a moment because I felt that I should be looked at. But I assure you that the news does not affect me either with pleasure or pain.
Jane, he's come. Mr. Bingley
is here to visit us. Oh. And he's not alone. He brings that tall, proud man with him.
What? Good gracious. Mr. Darcy. Oh, I hate the very sight of him. Girls, arrange yourselves. Jane, sit in my armchair, dear. You will look a picture next to the window with a light in your hair.
I am comfortable here, Mama.
Oh, come, do as I say for your own good. What is wrong with you? Elizabeth, take the corner stool. We must look composed for the gentleman.
Mr. Bingley and Mr. Darcy.
Good day, ma'am.
Mr. Bingley! Well, we hardly know you. It is such a long time since you went away. I was afraid you would never come back.
No, not at all.
Many things have happened here. Miss Lucas is married and settled, and one of my own daughters, I suppose you heard of it. It was in the Times, though it was not put in as it ought to be. It only said, lately George Wickham Esquire to Miss Lydia Bennet, without there being a syllable said of her father or the place where she lived. Did you see it?
I did. Many congratulations.
How long do you mean to stay in the county, Mr. Bingley?
A few weeks, I hope. It is good to be back. How are you, Miss Bennet?
I am well.
You look very well.
Mr. Bingley, you are quite a visit in my debt. For when you went to town last winter, you promised to take a family dinner with us as soon as you returned.
Oh, forgive me, madam. Perhaps we can remedy that now.
I suppose you can come too, Mr. Darcy.
You are kind.
Well, let us fix a date at once.
We must.
After tea had been taken and the gentleman had left, Jane repaired to her room, where Elizabeth soon sought her out.
Oh, Jane, he still admires you. Did not you see the way he looked at you?
Stop it, Lizzie. I saw nothing particular in his look. He is just a sweet-natured young man. I enjoy his company, but nothing more. But what of you and Mr. Darcy? Did it pain you to see him again?
If he had spoken to me or even glanced in my direction, I might have been upset. But no, he seemed determined to ignore me. But I have hope of Mr. Bingley. I really do, Jane.
No, you must not say so. Oh, I have such a headache coming on.
A few days after this visit, Mr. Bingley called again.
Jane!
Alone.
He has come again!
And then again the next day.
Come to Miss Bennet and help her on with her gown. Oh, never mind Miss Lizzie's hair.
And as luck would have it, he had no engagement for the day after that either. Jane spoke no more of her indifference. Elizabeth, who had a letter to write, went into the breakfast room for that purpose soon after tea.
Oh, forgive me.
Oh, Lizzie, do not go.
I will leave you two alone. You must tell her the good news.
Oh, Lizzie, I think my heart will burst. I do not deserve it. Oh, why is not everybody so happy?
Oh, congratulations, my dearest Jane. And to think but 3 days ago you were perfectly indifferent to him.
He has made me so happy. Oh, and Lizzie, you must know he was totally ignorant of my being in London last spring.
I suspected as much.
Would you believe it that when he went to town last November, he really loved me? Oh, he thought I did not love him.
He made a mistake.
Well, but it is to the credit of his modesty.
Here she is. Oh, Jane, I congratulate you. You will be a very happy woman. I have no doubt of your doing very well together. Your tempers are by no means unalike. You are each so complying that nothing will ever be resolved on, so easy that every servant will cheat you, and so generous that you will always exceed your income.
Oh, I hope not, Papa.
Exceed their income? What are you talking of, Mr. Bennet? Why, he has 4,000 or 5,000 a year, and very likely more. Oh, my dear, dear Jane. Oh, I'm so happy. I knew you could not be so beautiful for nothing. Oh, I am so happy. I shan't sleep a wink tonight. I shall probably never sleep again.
Oh, Mama.
The next day brought fresh surprises, for they received a most unexpected visitor at Longbourn.
Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
Oh, your ladyship. What an honour. A surprise. Welcome to our humble home.
Miss Elizabeth Bennet. That lady, I suppose, is your mother?
Oh, yes, she is.
And that, I suppose, is one of your sisters?
Yes.
Yes, madam. She is my youngest girl but one. My youngest of all is lately married, and my eldest is somewhere about the grounds, walking with a young man who, I believe, will soon become a part of the family.
You have a very small park here. Miss Bennet, I should be glad to take a turn in your grounds if you will favour me with your company.
Go, my dear, and show her ladyship the many different walks.
Of course.
You can be at no loss, Miss Bennet, to understand the reason of my journey hither.
Indeed, you are mistaken, madam. I have not been able to account for the honour of seeing you here.
Miss Bennet, do not trifle with me. A report of a most alarming nature reached me 2 days ago. I was told that not only your sister was on the point of being most advantageously married, but that you would, in all likelihood, be soon afterwards united to my nephew, Mr. Darcy. Though I know it must be a scandalous falsehood, I instantly resolved on setting off for this place that I might make my sentiments known to you.
If you believe it impossible to be true, I wonder you took the trouble of coming so far.
Do you then pretend to be ignorant of this report?
I never heard of it.
Miss Bennet, I insist on being satisfied. Has my nephew made you an offer of marriage?
Your ladyship has declared it to be impossible.
Do you know who I am? I am almost the nearest relation he has in the world, and I'm entitled to know all his dearest concerns.
But you are not entitled to know mine.
Let me be clear. Mr. Darcy is engaged to my daughter.
If he is, you can have no reason to suppose he will make an offer to me.
The engagement between them is of a peculiar kind. It was the favourite wish of both my sister and I, while in their cradle we planned the union. And now, at the moment when the union would be accomplished, to be prevented by a young woman of inferior birth, of no importance in the world, and wholly unallied to the family, are you lost to every feeling of propriety and delicacy?
If there is no other objection to my marrying your nephew, I shall certainly not be kept from it by knowing his mother and aunt wished him to marry Mr. Berg. If Mr. Darcy is neither by honour nor inclination confined to his cousin, why is he not to make another choice? And if I am that choice, why may I not accept it?
Because honour, decorum, prudence, nay, interest forbid it.
Lady Catherine...
I will not be interrupted! My daughter and my nephew are formed for one another. Their fortune on both sides is splendid. They are destined for each other. And what is to divide them? The upstart pretensions of a young woman without family, connections or fortune. If you were sensible, you would not wish to quit the sphere in which you have been brought up.
In marrying your nephew, I should not consider myself as quitting the sphere. He is a gentleman. I am a gentleman's daughter. So far, we are equal.
Tell me once and for all, are you engaged to him?
I am not.
Ah. And will you promise me never to enter into such an engagement?
I will make no promise of the kind.
Miss Bennet, I am shocked and astonished. But do not think I will give up until you have given me the assurance I require.
I shall never give it.
But I have yet another objection to add. I am no stranger to the particulars of your youngest sister's infamous elopement. I know it all. And such a girl is to be my nephew's sister. Is her husband, the son of his late father's steward, to be his brother? What are you thinking? Are the shades of Pemberley to be thus polluted?
You can now have nothing further to say. You have insulted me in every possible method. I must beg to return to the house.
Selfish, stupid girl. Think of my nephew's honour. A connection with you would disgrace him in the eyes of the world.
Lady Catherine, I have nothing further to say.
You are then resolved to have him?
I am only resolved to act in that manner which, in my opinion, will constitute my happiness.
You refuse then to oblige me?
Goodbye, Lady Catherine.
I take no leave of you, Miss Bennet. I send no compliments to your mother. You deserve no such attention. I am seriously displeased.
Lizzie!
I have received a letter this morning that has astonished me exceedingly. I did not know before today that I had two daughters on the brink of matrimony.
Who is the letter from?
Mr. Collins.
Well, what can he have to say?
Well, let's see. There is much extraneous detail. Congratulations on Jane's news, blah, 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 blah. Oh, and he advises me, as a Christian, never to admit Lydia again to my sight. As a Christian, he tells me this, mind. Where is the passage concerning you? Ah, here we are. Your daughter, Elizabeth, it is presumed, will not long bear
the name of Bennet, and the chosen partner of her fate may be reasonably looked up to as one of the most illustrious personages of the land.
Can you possibly guess, Lizzie, who is meant by this?
Let me warn my cousin Elizabeth that we have reason to believe that his aunt, Lady Catherine de Bourgh, does not look on the match with a friendly eye.
Mr. Darcy is the man. He thinks you are to marry Mr. Darcy, the one man in the world for whom you feel nothing but dislike. It is absurd, is it not?
Where's Jane? Oh, excuse me, Papa, but Mr. Bingley's here and wants to go walking. Oh, and he has brought Mr. Darcy with him. Oh. You will have to talk to him, Lizzie, because I'm going to see Maria.
Worse luck, Lizzie. Try and fend him off as best you can.
Mr. Darcy, I can no longer refrain from thanking you for your extraordinary kindness to my sister.
I'm sorry that you have been informed of it.
Oh, you must not blame my aunt. It was Lydia who first told me of it. Let me thank you again in the name of all my family.
If you will thank me, let it be for yourself alone. Much as I respect your family, I thought only of you.
Oh.
You were too generous to trifle with me. If your feelings are still what they were last April, tell me so at once. My affections and wishes are unchanged, but one word from you will silence me on this subject forever.
Oh, my feelings have undergone such a material change since then. I cannot tell you how welcome your words are, how I have wished for them.
My dearest Elizabeth, can it be true that you love me too?
It is true.
Will you be my wife?
It would be an honour.
Oh, my Lizzie.
I thought you would never ask me again.
Well, my aunt called on me yesterday and told me of your meeting. It taught me to hope. I knew that had you been absolutely decided against me, you would have acknowledged it to Lady Catherine frankly and openly.
Yes, you know me well. After abusing you so abominably to your face, I could have no scruple in abusing you to all your relations.
Oh, what did you say of me that I did not deserve? My behaviour at that time was unpardonable. I was arrogant. I expected you to accept me. I expected you to be grateful.
Neither of us is beyond reproach. What must you have thought of me when we met at Pemberley?
I felt nothing but surprise.
You were so kind to us.
I wanted to prove to you that I was not so mean as to resent the past.
I was so desirous of your good opinion then, when I felt there was no hope for it. But tell me, when did you begin to love me?
I cannot fix on the hour, or the spot, or the look, or the words which laid the foundation. I was in the middle before I knew that I had begun. I will speak to your father.
Lizzie. Are you out of your senses to be accepting this man? I thought you hated him.
Have you any other objection than your belief of my indifference?
We all know him as a proud, unpleasant sort of man, but this would be nothing if you really liked him.
He's not proud at all. You do not know what he really is like.
Lizzie, I have given him my consent. He is the kind of man, indeed, to whom I should never dare refuse anything, but I know you, Lizzie. I know you could not be happy unless you truly esteemed your husband. My child, let me not have the grief of seeing you unable to respect your partner in life.
He is the kindest, most generous man alive. I could not love him more, Papa. I could spend all week enumerating his good qualities, what he has done for us as a family. But chiefly, you must know it was he who paid Wickham's debts.
What?
He did everything. He ensured Lydia's marriage. He secured Wickham his commission.
Well, 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 it is a day of wonders. I have no more to say. I could not have parted with you, my Lizzie, to anyone more worthy. Now you must tell your mother.
She will be surprised.
She will take it in her stride. And I shall write at once to Mr. Collins. I shall enjoy that. But if any young men come for Mary or Kitty, send them in, for I am quite at my leisure.
Oh! Good gracious! Lord bless me! Only think, oh, dear me! Mr. Darcy! Oh, my sweetest Lizzie! How rich and great you will be! What pin money, what jewels, what carriages you will have! Oh, Jane is nothing to it, nothing at all! Oh, I am so pleased! What a charming man! I have always thought so. So handsome. Oh, and tall. Three daughters married. 10,000 a year. Oh, Lord, what will become of me? I shall go distracted.
Dear Mr. Collins, I must trouble you once more for congratulations. Elizabeth will soon be the wife of Mr. Darcy. Console Lady Catherine as well as you can, but if I were you, I would stand by the nephew. He has more to give.
Happy for all her maternal feelings was the day on which Mrs. Bennet got rid of her two most deserving daughters. With what delighted pride she afterwards visited Mrs. Bingley and talked of Mrs. Darcy may be guessed. I wish I could say, for the sake of her family, that this happy ending produced so miraculous an effect as to make her a sensible, amiable, well-informed woman for the rest of her life, though perhaps it was lucky for her husband, who might not have been able to withstand such a change, that she still was occasionally nervous and invariably silly.
Well, Mrs. Darcy, how do you like Pemberley now you are mistress of it?
Oh, I like it tolerably well, although it is not handsome enough to tempt me.
Ah, then I think you are proud wife.
You would know, Mr. Darcy.
Take my arm, dearest. Shall we walk around the park?
Do I tease you too often, my love?
Georgiana is astonished by your behaviour.
I love your sister, but she needs to learn that a wife must sometimes take liberties with her husband.
She certainly found her teacher, then.
But you do know how much I love you.
You intend to tell me every day, I hope.
In episode 3 of Pride and Prejudice by Jane Austen, Elizabeth Bennet was played by Pippa Nixon, Mr. Darcy by Jamie Parker, Mrs. Bennet by Samantha Spiro, and Mr. Bennet by David Troughton. Mr. Bingley was Joshua Maguire, Jane Bennet, Lydia Wilson, Lydia, Georgie Fuller, and Wickham, Joel McCormack. Mrs. Gardner was Priyanka Burford, Mr. Gardner, Steve Toussaint, and Lady Catherine de Bourgh, Carolyn Pickles. Miss Bingley was Fenella Woolgar, Mr. Collins, Toby Jones, Kitty Bennet, Caris O'Leary, and Georgiana Darcy, Catherine Rose Morley. The narrator was Amanda Root. Pride and Prejudice was dramatised by Charlotte Jones and directed by Sally Avens.